We're holding the last words on Pei Ahmed Bey's last line. We learned yesterday about tikkunis that the Chachamim made for the preservation of the lands and the agriculture and everything of Eretz Yisrael. For that reason, you can't raise the Hamadaka over there. So now the Gemara talks about tikkunis, about a bunch of tikkunis that are meant to regulate life in Eretz Yisrael, and as we'll see in other places as well. And the first one of them is related to this point about where you're allowed to graze animals. So the Gemara says, Tanunabam, Asara Tnoi Hisna Yoshua. Yeshua made 10 conditions with the Jewish people when they conquered and settled Eretz Yisrael. Then he made these 10 conditions that they have to accept. At the end of Sefer Yeshua, you have, it describes Yeshua gathered everybody together for a meeting to give them his final words. The beginning of his speech over there, we say in the Haggadah, Koyam Hashem Be'ev Ranar, Yashua V'Seichem Me'olam, V'Ekech Zavichem V'Savraham, the couple of psukim that we say over there, Vayemi Yeshua Kalam, comes from this speech. He goes on and summarizes everything that Hashem had done for them until now, and he tells them make sure to continue serving Hashem and don't even think of worshipping Avodah Zarah. And then at the end it says over there, Vayosim Lechokul Mishpat Shchem, that there in Shchem, which is where this meeting took place, he set up for them Chokul Mishpat. So it actually says, Mephoshim say over there, that it means that he set up these rules that the Gemara is going to say. So, rule number one, Shiyu Marin B'choshen, people are allowed to graze their animals in the forest in Eretz Yisrael. Now, we're going to go through after we're going to list the 10 things, and then the Gemara is going to go through and start dealing with them in detail and working out the details of each one of them. So here, the first one is people are allowed to graze their animals in forest, even if the forest belongs to somebody else, under the conditions that we're going to see in the Gemara. There is something that the Gaonim bring that it means a field that was plowed by somebody else where he hasn't actually planted there yet. If you have anything grows over there, you're allowed to graze your animals over there. So according to that, Choshen is Meloshen Charisha. Anyway, the second one, Melakten Eitzim Besadisehem, the second one is you're allowed to gather wood in somebody else's field, again, subject to the conditions that we're going to see soon. The third one, Malaktim Asavim B'chol Mokim, you're allowed to gather grasses and herbs to feed your animals from any place. Chutz Mitilton, with the exception of ones that grow near Tilton. Tilton is a plant. In English, it's called fenugreek. It's also known as chilbe. They use it a lot in Yemenite cooking. You can buy it in the store. It has little triangular seeds. Anyway, that kind of thing, as the Gemara is going to go work out, certain kinds of tilton grasses are good for them when they grow there, and therefore the owner of the tilton wants the grass to be there so that it'll improve the tilton or that he can feed it to his animals as well, and therefore you can't collect that. But other than that, you could. The fourth thing is the fourth one is you're allowed to break off a branch from a tree to use it to plant someplace else. You plant a branch from a tree, and basically you're creating a clone of the tree, and eventually it grows roots and develops into a tree of your own. So you're allowed to do that anywhere. You're allowed to break off a branch from a young tree like that to plant, or it actually points out you could also use it to graft onto another tree. And that's fine. Chutz migrofius shalzayis, with the exception of you can't do that with groifius of an olive tree. Rashi explains that groifius is related to the word egroif, which means a fist. So when it comes to olive trees, you have to leave at least 2 fist-sized pieces of the length of the branch on the tree, because otherwise it won't regrow, and then you're rooting the tree. There's a different explanation that some Rishonim bring, that the word for olive branches themselves is grofius, so therefore it would mean that you can't break off branches from an olive tree like that to plant someplace else at all, but you could do it with other trees. So that was the next one. The fifth takana of Yeshua is Umayin Ayotzi B'tchila, when you have a spring of water that flows forth from the ground for the first time, Bnei Ha'ir Mestapkin Mimenu, other people in town are allowed to use the water from that spring. He can't say, well, it came out on my property, then only I am allowed to use the water. Tosfos points out over here that there's a difference if he actually dug it, if he actually went to the trouble of digging it. First of all, Rashi mentions we don't just mean if it first came out now. We mean all the more so, actually, if it was there before the Jewish people conquered Eretz Yisrael. What we mean is that even when it came out new, and you would think the guy should have the right to say, well, it's in my property, shouldn't I be able to keep the water? Then no, we say he's still allowed to, we say that no, other people are allowed to make use of the water as well. Tosfos points out though that if he had dug the spring himself, if he had dug the well himself, that's different. Then he is indeed entitled to reserve the water for himself. Tosfos elsewhere points out also that there's a difference whether it's still on his property or whether the water flowed out. The Marshal points out that actually it's both. So if it remained within his property, so other people would be allowed to use the water only if it flowed out of his property and only if he himself hadn't dug it. Anyway, that was the fifth takana of Yeshua. The sixth one, umchakin b'yamash al Tveria. The sixth one is you're allowed to fish with a hook in the Sea of Tveria, which is the Kinneret. Now, even though, as the Gemara is going to tell us on Amud Beis, the Kinneret is actually part of the territory of Shevet Naphtali, nevertheless, people from other Shvatim are allowed to go and fish in that sea. However, you're not allowed to put up a kela because that would stop boats from going. Rashi describes that a kela is fishermen, sometimes they don't just want to catch individual fish with a hook. What they do is they set up it's called in English a weir. Rashi actually mentions that in Germany they call it Wicher, which is probably the German form of the same word. Whatever. What they do is they put like a fence of reeds in the water, and that way fish will get caught in it. So that kind of thing, a fence like that, is going to prevent boats from going. So that they're not allowed to do. Whether the people of Naphtali themselves, who the sea belongs to, whether they're allowed to do that themselves. Tosfos learns that not. Tosfos learns that that even the people of Shevet Naphtali are not allowed to do that because even though it's there, you could argue it's their lake. Can't they do with it whatever they want? Tosfos learns that not. They themselves would not be allowed to set up a weir, a fish trap like that either. Other Rishonim disagree and say that only the members of other Shvatim were not allowed. The Rambam actually writes that the members of Shevet Naphtali would be allowed to put up a kela like that, a weir like that, to trap fish. Only people from other Shvatim can't. But everybody, the point is, everybody is allowed to go and fish there with a line and a hook, because that doesn't prevent boats from going. The next one, the seventh one, the nifnin la'achore ageder. The next thing is, if a person has to go to the bathroom, he can go behind somebody's fence, into somebody's field, and he can go to the bathroom over there. And as we're going to learn on Amud Beis, that means he's also allowed to take a piece of dirt from the ground there, or a piece of rock from the fence, that going to most Mefoshim, and wipe himself. Even if it's a field full of saffron, which is a very valuable spice, and even a tiny area planted with saffron, obviously he can't go on the plants. But in other words, the point is, he's going close to the fence. He's sitting there close to the fence, and the point is, a field like that needs extra protection so nobody goes in and steals the saffron. Nevertheless, as the Gemara is going to say, on other days, he's allowed to take a little pebble from the fence over there and use it to wipe with. So that was one of Yeshua's takanas. We're up to number eight now. Actually, the Gemara is going to point out later on that this one doesn't count as one of the ten. We're going to explain later on that this particular one actually comes from Shlomo HaMelech, but right now the Braisa has it as one of them. Anyway, you're allowed to walk through the optional paths agitated until the second rain falls in Cheshvan. Shvivya Rishus, Rashi explains, you have this period of time now where, now the agricultural calendar, so you have, there's a time when the crops are grown in the field. Obviously, you don't want people walking through your field then because they'll damage the crops walking through. Eventually, you have a time, eventually you've harvested the crops and then, you're leaving them out in the field to dry. People are not allowed to walk through the field for the same reason. Eventually you've gathered in your produce around Sukkot time, which is why Sukkot is called Chag HaOsif. At that point, you have the field is empty until the next plowing season begins. So during that time, eventually you plow, and eventually it starts raining, and then fertilizes the ground, and the seeds that you planted start growing. During that in between time, after the gathering in, until Revia Shnia, until the second rain of the year, which usually happens around Yud Zayin Cheshvan. Actually, mentions that according to one opinion. The Gemara in Tainus mentions a couple of other opinions, but whatever. It's sometime during Cheshvan. Then, during that time, people are allowed to walk through another person's field as a shortcut because Yeshua made a takana. Nobody should be machped on that, even though in general your average farmer is not going to be machped on it anyway because there's nothing there at that point to be ruined, but Yeshua made it an official takana that nobody, or as we're going to say later, Shlomo HaMelech made it an official takana that you shouldn't be machped on it. So they're called Shvilei HaRishus in the sense because you have Rishus from the owner of the, you have implicit Rishus from the owner of the property to do that. The Oroch gives a different explanation. He says that it means it means they have a Rishus on them. It's not that these paths are Hefter. They do belong to somebody. Just temporarily you're allowed to use them and then nobody can object. The next one is umistalkin l'tzidei hadrochim. When you're walking on the road, you're allowed to go walk along the edges of the fields by the sides of the roads. Mipnei yisedes hadrochim because of the pegs on the road. Rashi describes remember they didn't have paved roads then. During the winter time, the rainy season in Eretz Yisrael, the roads are all wet and muddy. Eventually the mud dries, and you have in different places, because of the way that people stepped on it during the winter, you have in different places it dries and forms like spikes. Those are called yisedes hadrochim. It forms like spikes and pegs in the road. The Rashba explains it slightly differently. You have like potholes in the road, and you have the edges of the potholes are called yisedes. Whatever the case, the point is, in order to avoid those, you're allowed to walk along the edges of the road, even though that's the edge of somebody's property, and he has even grain grown there. You're allowed to do that in order to get away from these pegs and pothole like things on the road. The next one, the ninth one, Vatoya Ben Akromim, if somebody is among vineyards and he's lost and he can't find his way, Mefasig Va'ola or Mefasig V'yodin. He's allowed to cut his way through. He's allowed to cut branches to make himself a path to go up or to go down, as the case may be, in order to find the road so he can get back on track. When we get to this in the Gemara, we'll deal with the question, does that mean, what exactly are we talking about? Does he have to pay the owner of the, does he have to pay the owner of the vineyard for the damage that he caused, or is he potter from that because, maybe the takana of Yeshua is that he's potter from having to pay for that? So we'll get to that later, Best Hashem. Actually, I guess, I mean, we could talk about it a little bit now, I suppose. The Ravid brings that, of course you have to pay for it. He says this is an example called Matzalatzim and Mamun Chaveira. Later on, we talked about it briefly earlier in the Masechta. We're going to talk about it in detail in the last paragraph, a couple of blocks before the end. You have a case over there where a person is running away and he broke somebody's kelim as he's running, where he's chayav to pay, because it's called Matzalatzim and Mamun Chaveira. We talked about it on Daf Samach Aleph in connection with a story with David HaMelech over there. So the Ravid holds, of course he's going to have to pay. The Rashba says, I don't know about that. I mean, the whole point is, then what does Yeshua need to make a takana for? So therefore, he doesn't have to pay that. And the Ravid says, without Yeshua's takana, the person wouldn't be allowed to in the first place unless the owner is there. And they go back and forth between them, and there's different Rishonim and Achronim that deal with different angles on that. Okay. Anyway, so that was the next to last takana. And the last one, mes mitzvah, kona makomo, the last one is, if you find a mes mitzvah, then it acquires its place, meaning you find a body, you find a dead body, you bury it wherever it is, even though it's on somebody's property, you don't say the owner of the property doesn't have the right to say, well, I don't want it buried on my property, then I'm losing the use of that area. No, yeah, the mes mitzvah acquires its place and you bury him there. The Medrash, by the way, tells a story, I think it's in Ovestid of Nassim and Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, I don't remember, that when Rabbi Akiva first started learning Torah by Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, it describes one time he found a mes mitzvah, and he didn't know this din yet, so he carried the mes mitzvah a few mil to the nearest Jewish town to bury it among Jews. And then he comes back and tells his Rebbeim very proudly of what he did. And they told him, actually, you were wrong. Every step that you did is like shvichus damim, because the guy messed mitzvah konu makomei. And Rabbi Akiva realizes from this that, you know what, I can't just be learning Torah as an occasional thing, you know, I gotta fartifsich in it, because here you have something which das balabayas would tell you is a very great thing to do, but on the other hand, das Torah tells you that it's the opposite. Koina means it acquires. It means that it now owns its place, basically. Oh, and so, yeah. With that said, though, of course, you know, again, the Gemara itself is going to mention details about that, but also to a certain extent, the Gemara is going to talk about on Omid Beis that these takanas do apply in Chutz La'aretz. However, this kind of thing, not necessarily, because if you bury a body anywhere, eventually it may, the goyim may dig it up, or who knows what, or whatever. So then you have more of a reason to take it to a Jewish Beis HaKvaris. And there is, in fact, a story closer to our times, a story of a Yid in Eretz Yisrael who's completely secular, didn't have a lot to do with Torah and mitzvahs. His father, after he passed away, started, his father also hadn't been, so, but after his father passes away, he starts coming to him in a dream and starts urging him to do tshuva. And the son, after a while, is very bothered. This is back in the 1940s or 50s. So the son finally goes to the Chazon Ish to find out what's going on over here. And the Chazon Ish tells him, you know, listen, this is a great schus that you gave your father a chance to come tell you to do tshuva. What special schus do you have? The kitzur, it turned out, when this guy who came to the Chazon Ish, when he was young, when he was back when he was living in Poland or Russia or wherever it was, he one time found a dead Jewish body and carried it to the nearest Beis HaKvaris to bury it. Where there, again, that's because out there, you can't just bury it wherever you find it. The goyim will do who knows what with it, whatever. So then in the schus of that, now many years later, he had the schus that his father came to be murdered in Petrova. So yeah, anyway. So those are the takonis of Yeshua, and the Gemara is going to ask later on that on the face of it, we have 11 listed over here when we started saying that it was only 10, and the answer is going to be that one of them was actually from Shlomo HaMelech. So we'll get to that.
I think the branches, you don't get into branches like you didn't go deep in that field. You know how branches get lost.
Well, somehow it happened. The guy wound up lost in somebody else's vineyard. How he got lost there in the first place is a good question, but nevertheless, you have this machlokas of the Rai, of the Raivan and the Rashba, whether he has to pay for the branches that he breaks or not. Okay, let's go through and analyze each of these takonis in detail. The first one, Shiyu Marin Omamar. No, we don't have Omamar. Okay, Shiyu Marin B'Choshin. The first one was that you can graze your animals in Choshin, where we said according to Rashi and most Rishonim, it means a forest, and according to the Gaonim, it means a plowed field. So Omar Papa Loyamaran Ella Daka Vagasa. That would only be that a small animal, a sheep or a goat, can graze in a big forest where therefore the animals are not very likely to damage the trees, or at least not very much. Abel Daka Vadaka, but small animals in a small forest where they could easily end up destroying all the trees. No, because on the contrary, you have, let's say, for example, imagine the animal, let's say, eats the bark off a tree, for example. A big tree, it's not going to be able to eat all the bark off it and destroy it, but with small trees or a small forest or whatever, it could easily do that. So Rashi says small or big means the size of the forest. So behema daka in a big forest, that you allowed. Avil daka b'daka, but a small animal in a small forest, v'gasa b'gasa, or a large animal like a cow in a large forest, loy, then not, v'choshek and gasa b'daka d'loy, and all the more so a large animal like a cow to have that graze in a small forest, for sure not, because it may end up destroying the whole forest. Okay. Next, the Malachtin Eitzim is Sedeseyem. We said the second takana was that you can gather wood from other people's fields. So the Gemara points out, Loyamoran Elabihizmi Vihigi. That's only talking about when we're talking about the kind of wood you're collecting is like thorn bushes. Hizmi Vihigi are various kinds of thorn bushes. The Rambam actually, when he brings these halachas, he says we don't mean actual Hizmi Vihigi, we just mean ones that are similar to those. In other words, they're basically worthless except as firewood. Other kinds of wood not, because the owner of the field wants that wood for his own uses. Even when it comes to hizmi vihigi, it's only when they're attached to the ground, then you might say, look, you know, I'm doing you, the owner of the field, a favor. Like this, they're attached to the ground. They're taking nutrients from the ground that you would prefer, that are used, that go towards your own crops. So therefore, so let me take these hizmi vihigi. But if they're detached from the ground, they're anyway not taking any nourishment from the ground anymore, so therefore you have no right to take them. The owner himself may well want them for firewood. And even when they're attached to the ground, only when they're still fresh, where then they're actually taking nutrients from the ground. But not if they're dry. You know, even if they're attached to the ground, if they're dry, same thing. They're not taking nutrients from the ground anyway. The owner himself is likely to want them for firewood. Although Vad Shalor Yisharish, and one more thing, he's not allowed to pull out the roots of the tree. So we're talking about even you have like a thorny tree over there and it's dry and it's detached or whatever, but he can't actually pull it out. He can take wood over there, but he can't actually pull it out by the roots. Yeah, but that's the point. He can't do that. He can cut off a piece of wood or something, but not yet. Okay. The third one, Malachtin Asavim B'chol Mokum Chutz Misdei Tilson. The third one we said is you can collect grass or herbs wherever you want to feed your animals, except for in a field of tilton. Whereas we said tilton is a type of fenugreek, it's called in English, it's chilba, they call it in Yemenite cooking. So that's the question. Now, the assumption is because grass is good for that, when grass or herbs grow near tilton, then they help improve it. Well, the Gemara asks, is that in fact so? Lememra de tilton malo asavim. So you're telling me that grass growing near tilton is good for it? Or a mini, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, actually it's a Mishnah, tilton sha'olse minasavim. If you have tilton grows together with various kinds of herbs, so now normally you have a din of kelayim, you have kelayim zroyim, you know, you have to plant different types of grasses or herbs or vegetables together. But here you have that tilton is growing near other kinds of grasses. We don't require him to uproot the grasses. We're not concerned about kelayim. So Rashi explains, because eventually he's going to remove it soon enough anyway, because it ruins the tilton. So then in that case, it means that grasses growing near tilton are bad for it. So what is the Braisa over here with Yeshua's Shnoyim implying that it's good for it? So Tosfos asks a couple of questions on Rashi's explanation and says that actually, no, in b'chayv v'noselako doesn't mean like Rashi says, because pretty soon he's going to do it anyway, we don't have to be b'chayv of him because he himself, the farmer himself, is going to do it. Rather, what it means is, Tosfos says, there's actually, he's not being over on any iser because he didn't plant it himself. It's not like he deliberately went and planted the grasses there. The wind brought seeds of these grasses over there, and they grew, and therefore he's not technically doing an iser. Now there are two isurim. You're not allowed to plant kelayim together. You're also not allowed to keep kelayim growing together. Now, as far as planting, he wasn't over because he didn't plant these other grasses. And as far as being mekayim them, he's not likely to because, like we said, it's bad for the tilton. No, that's not the point. The point is that we're assuming that whenever you see tilton with grasses, the assumption based on the Mishnah and Kelayim means that's bad for it. So why is Yeshua saying that you can't plant, that you can't pluck the grasses over there? Can't you say to the owner of the tilton, I'm doing you a favor to prevent your tilton from getting ruined? So that's the question. You're like Kasha, Kamuzera Kamuzirin. So Rabbi Yirmiya says, there's no question, there's no contradiction, because there's a difference whether you planted the tilton to use the seeds, because you plan to replant the seeds, versus where you're using it, where you planted it, for the zirin, which means the branches. Where you're planning to feed the branches, you're planning to feed the branches to your animals. So the difference is, lazera kosher lasavim, if you're growing the tilton for the seeds, then having other grasses growing around over there is bad for it. The machishilah, because they weaken it. Because after all, the grasses are taking nutrients from the ground that you want to go into the seeds. Lazirin, but when you're planting the chiltern to use the branches to, for animal food, malilah, then it's good. Then you want the grass there to kikaimi, ben yasav, and mirkava, because then when the chiltern is growing among other grasses, it spreads out over them and they help hold it up. So apparently, Rashi describes, apparently the chiltern plant is a weak plant that normally would, it's similar to grape, Rashi compares it to grapevines. Apparently the idea is normally it would sprawl all over the ground when you have other grasses over there. They serve as like a support, almost like a trellis, like you have for grapes. So therefore, so when he's planting it for Zirin, he doesn't care about the fact that the seeds are now going to be lesser quality because he's not really caring about the seeds anyway. He basically wants the branches for animal food. So then a Asavim growing near it is good for it, and therefore you're not allowed to pick those, therefore another person is not allowed to pick those grasses because the owner of the chiltern wants it, as opposed to when he's growing the chiltern because he wants the seeds, whether for cooking or whether for replanting or whatever, he wants the seeds to be as potent as possible, and the other grasses take nutrients from the soil and don't allow the seeds to grow as well. That would be what the Mishnah in Kilayim is describing, that there's no issue of Kilayim in such a case. Because like Rashi says, you're pretty soon going to pick the grass anyhow, or because like Tosfos says, anyway, you wouldn't have planted the grass there, the hatchila, it came over there on the wind or whatever, and therefore you're not chayav to remove it. How is a stranger supposed to realize? So when it comes to Zirin, so Mephoshim don't deal with it, but apparently when you're dealing with Zirim or Zera, it becomes easy enough to see from the way that thing is planted, whether it was planted for one or for the other, and therefore you'd be able to tell. They're all farmers in those days. Yeah, they'd be familiar with such things. In fact, the Shittim Kabbatz is good. The next distinction the Gemara is going to make, the Gemara is going to ask how you know. But this one, the Gemara doesn't even bother asking because apparently it was easy enough to tell. Or another answer you could say. It depends whether you're talking about whether the chiltern was planted for people to eat or for animals to eat. So if it's for people, again, you want it to be as potent as possible, so therefore you don't want any grasses growing near it. So now if somebody else comes and picks the grasses, he's doing you a favor. On the other hand, if you planted the chiltern to begin with to feed to animals, then given to the behema who desara, you planted it to feed animals, asavim nami boila. So look, you want the grasses as well. The animals can graze on the grasses as well. So now the question is, how are we supposed to know? Meila with the zirin versus zera, apparently it's easier to tell the distinction based on the way it's planted, based on the way it's growing, whatever. But here, when it comes to whether it's for animal food or for people food, how are you supposed to tell? Amar Papa. So like this, shara mishare mishare. If he planted it in neat rows or neat beds, lo adam, then it showed that he planted it for people to eat. Loy shara mishare, but if he didn't plant it in neat rows, la behema, then we know he planted it for behema. So therefore, a passerby will be able to easily tell whether it's in neat rows or plots or whatever, and therefore he'll know that yes, he can pick the grasses around it then, based on Yeshua's takana, whereas if he sees it planted indiscriminately, then he knows it's being planted for animals, and then, like we said, then he can't take the grasses, because then we assume the owner himself wants the grasses that the chiltern, together with the other grasses, will serve as food for his animals. Tosfos, though, does point out it does have to be, in order for there not to be a problem of kilayim over here, it would have to be that the other grasses make up less than 1/24 of the total of what's growing in that area. You have the Mishnayos and kilayim described. You can have a situation, for example, imagine a person has wheat that he wants to plant and a few grains of barley got mixed in with it. So we don't require him to sit and pick out every single grain of barley. As long as it's less than 1/24 of the total, then he can go plant it and there's no problem. So here, it means approximately 4 pieces out of every 100, yeah. So similarly over here, Tosfos says it would have to actually be that the grasses make up less than 1/24 of the total of the total volume of what's growing over here. Next, the next takana of Yeshua's was, we said, the koipin natiya b'chol makom. We said you're allowed to pluck off a branch from a tree anywhere, where we said you could use it for grafting on another tree, you could use it for planting and creating a new clone of the old tree. So you're allowed to do that, except we said, chutz mi groifius, shalzayas, we said with the exception of groifius of a fig tree, of an olive tree. So we said, Rashi explained that groifius means, is meloshin egroi, for fist. So when it comes to olive trees, you have to leave at least 2 fist lengths of the branch and not pick it off the tree, otherwise it won't regrow. Other Mephoshim explain that Groifius is the actual name of branches of olive trees, so therefore the implication would be with olive trees you can't pick off branches at all, but with other trees you could. So the Gemara says, as far as the other trees, so how much are you allowed to take? Pirush Reb Tanchum v'Rabbayus Mishum Zaken Echad. So Reb Tanchum and Rabbayus explain in the name of one old Talmud Chacham. So it's like this. Bezayis kebetza, when it comes to olive trees, you have to leave at least the size of a kebetza of the branch still attached to the tree, and then you can take the rest of the and then you can take the rest of it. According to Rashi, who said that you have to leave shteya groifim, the point is, in other words, that the point is that we're saying that so you have to leave shteya groifim. You also have to make sure that it's at least the volume of a kebetza. But the kanim of a kfanim, when it comes to reeds like bamboo, or the kfanim, and when it comes to grapevines, you're allowed to pick mina pkak ulamaila, only from the pkak and going upward. The pkak is like Rashi describes as kesher, means a joint. You look for example at a piece of bamboo, so you have joints at various places in it. When the bamboo is growing, you have the leaves come out from those joints between one segment and the next. You have like each segment is hollow, and then you have a joint, you have like a ring around it, and then you have the next one. So that kind of thing is called pkak. Grapevines are similar, so you have to leave the pkak closest to the tree, but then after that you're allowed to break off the branch beyond that, because then it'll regrow. So it comes out as you go from the one closest to the main trunk. As far as other trees, mean uboy shel ilon, you're allowed to pick from the uboy of the tree, which means Rashi says from the newly grown soft branches, but not from the big branches of the tree. Chode literally means the sharpness, so it would mean, Rashi explains that uboy means the young branches, and chode would mean the mature branches. Then Rashi brings another explanation from the Goinim that chuboy means the area of the tree where you have a lot of branches together, so you're allowed to pick an individual branch from them. But chudoy would mean the top branch, the one that sticks up and then makes the crown of the tree, that you would not be allowed to take. So no, the point, you'd be taking this branch either in order to clone the tree, to plant it someplace else, and eventually it'll grow roots and develop into a tree of its own, or to graft onto another tree that this way you have somebody else has, for example, a good grapevine that produces good grapes. You want to graft a branch of his grapevine onto yours in order that your grapes will also improve. So this is one of the surest things that you're allowed to do, subject to the conditions that we're staying over here. So the Gemara continues. Min chodash she'ena oisaperis. It can only be a new branch that's not yet producing fruits. V'loi min yashin shu oisaperis. You can't pick an old branch which is already producing fruits, because then you're directly damaging the other guy's tree. You're taking fruits of his, or you're preventing it from growing fruits. Min makam she'ena roya sachama. It also has to be from a part of a tree, from the part of the tree which does not see the sun. So either it's deep within the tree, the part where the sun doesn't really reach so well, or it means from the side of the tree that doesn't face the sun so much. So anyway, any fruit that would have grown there isn't going to be very good quality anyway. But not from the areas that are going to see the sun, meaning the areas closer to the outside of the tree, because the sun beats down on the fruits and it ripens them and makes them actually really good quality. And then if you take a branch from there, then you're damaging the guy's crop. Shenema, when we megad tvoi shamish, as we find in Moshe Rabbeinu's brachas to shave at Yosef, he says from the sweetness of the produce of the sun, because that's what happens when you have sunlight that beats down on a tree, on the fruit of a tree, it ripens it. It helps develop the starches in it, get converted into sugars, and you have the tree because the fruit rather becomes much better quality. So a branch from that part of the tree, from those parts of the tree that face the sun, you wouldn't be allowed to take because then you're directly damaging something that would have produced a good crop for the owner. But you're anyway taking from further in to the depths of the tree, where anyway the sunlight doesn't reach there so strongly, and the fruits there are anyway going to be inferior quality. And here you're talking about a branch which never even produced fruit yet. So that kind of branch you'd be allowed to take, subject to the conditions that he's saying. Okay. The next one. The next one, Umayin Ayotzi Tchila. We said the next takana of Yeshua was that when a spring first starts welling out from the ground, and as Rashi Bnei Yevstakim Mimenu, then the other people of the city are allowed to use the water from that spring. He can't say, well, it's in my property. As we talked about on Amud Aleph, first of all, Tosfos here says that, well, not if he actually dug it, not if he actually put an effort into digging it, and second of all, maybe only if the water actually flows out from his property and doesn't all stay within his property. And Rashi had mentioned, all the more so if the spring existed before the Jewish people conquered Eretz Yisrael, all the more so that everybody is allowed to use it. However, Rav Bar Rav Huna says, nevertheless, the other people who are using the water would have to pay him for the use of that. But the Gemara says, "V'les filch sakav say, the halacha is not like him; they're allowed to use the water for free." The next one, Umachakin v'Yamashal Tveria. So again, according to Tosfos, you have over here, Tosfos draws the distinction whether he himself had dug it or not. Elsewhere, Tosfos draws the distinction between whether the water is still on his property or not. And the Marshal points out both points are valid. So yeah, if it's in his field, then he might have the right to keep all the water for himself. But once it flows out, then he can't say, yeah, but it came from my field, and therefore you should be obligated to pay me. No, we're saying he doesn't. We're saying he doesn't need to do that. The next one, Machakin B'Yamashot Tveria, we said you're allowed to fish in the Sea of Tveria, in the Kinneret. We said as long as you don't spread out a kela, a weir, like we said before, a fence that you put, the word kela literally means a sail. But the word kela literally means a sail, but you don't catch fish with a sail. So Rashi describes an Oman Aleph, it's a thing that's in English it's called a weir. You stick poles into the seabed, and you put reeds, you make like a network of reeds or whatever between them, and that helps catch the fish. So the problem with that is v'yamidus haspina, that prevents boats from going. So the Braisa, so the Gemara says, Abel Tzadhu, B'rishosis, of a Mechmaris, however, you would be allowed to trap fish using various kinds of nets. Rishosis and Mechmaris are various kinds of nets. So nets and sends or whatever, you would be allowed to use those. Agrosa Gruah takes out that piece because the Gemara is going to bring a Braisa that says the same point, so therefore there's no reason to repeat it. In fact, we learn in a Braisa. Barishona hisnu ashvatim zeim zeh. To begin with, the shvatim made a condition with one another, shalo yifris klia, that a person is not going to set up a klia, which is another name for this fish weir over here, the yamidus haspina, because that'll prevent boats from going, abol tzadhu barishosis of a mechmaris, but that you're allowed to fish not only using a hook and line, but you're also allowed to fish using nets and things like that that don't prevent boats from going. Now, on the face of it, if we're saying over here that the Shvatim made this condition with one another, so why does Yeshua need to make it as one of his takanas? So there's a number. What? So that, there's a number of explanations. So yes, so one of them is in fact that it means that the Pnei Yeshua says something like that. When he says that when Yeshua had made that as long as you don't spread out a kela, that was the Shvatim themselves had made this agreement. Yeshua added to that. On the other hand, though, don't think that prevents anybody from fishing with hooks. You shouldn't think once they made that deal that nobody can put out a kela, maybe nobody can fish in there at all except for Shevet Naphtali. No, Yeshua added the detail that they are allowed to still fish with hooks. That they can still are allowed to fish with hooks, and as the Bryce says, also with various kinds of nets. There's a few other explanations. There's a few other explanations among Achronim. The Marshal says that there's a difference. Now, like this, we talk about on Amud Aleph, Tosfos learns that even Shevet Naphtali themselves are not allowed to put up a kela, are not allowed to put up a fish weir. So, on the other hand, the Marashal says, apparently not like that. Maybe the deal is that the other Shvatim made the deal. Nobody else, except for Shevet Naphtali, is allowed to do that. Anybody can use a hook, and anybody can use nets. In addition, Shevet Naphtali themselves, since they're the owners of that lake, they can also put up a fish weir, a fish trap like that if they want. Nobody else would be allowed to. So what he says is like this. The problem was, he says, that basically once you do that, at first the Yavashal Shalom explains like this. At first it would have been that all the difference is Shevet Naphtali can set up a fish weir, other Shvatim cannot. Later on, they decided, like Tosfos says, that no, even Shevet Naphtali themselves should not put up fish weirs because it prevents boats from going. The problem is, then what right does Shevet Naphtali have over the sea than anybody else? So therefore, they made a new rule among themselves, and said that other Shvatim can only use a hook, can only use a line and a hook, and not nets. So therefore, the difference would be Shevet Naphtali. So now, the original thing would have been Shevet Naphtali can use a fish weir, and everybody else can use nets or hooks. Later on, the takana was that nobody can make a fish weir, but Shevet Naphtali can use nets, and other Shvatim can only use hooks. And then there's other explanations as well. The Tertus Chaim explains that Yeshua made the Takana first, and then the Shvatim, who are also Yirei Shemayim, and they know we have to add to it the Takanas of the Chachamim when necessary. So to begin with, Yeshua made a takana, and then they added to it, and then they added to it later on, though, when people became more greedy, then they went back to Yeshua's takana and said that everybody can use only hooks. So in other words, there was a period of time when they were allowed to use nets, but then people ended up being greedy and fishing for more than they should, so then they went back to the original takana. So different ways of explaining. Okay. Now, the Gemara says, the Sea of Tveria, the Kinneret, is located actually in the territory of Naphtali. Not only that, but Naphtali was given an area of land to the south of the Kinneret, large enough to spread out nets to dry on the south side of the sea. L'kayim mashanema yom b'dorim yirosha. This fulfills what Moshe had said in his bracha to them. The sea and the south will be their inheritance. So they inherited the Sea of Tveria, the Kinneret, plus the south, an area immediately to the south of it, which would be an area where they could dry out their nets after fishing. And the Gemara continues, Tani Reb Shimon Elazar Omer, Tlushin Shebahorim, when you find grasses or plants or whatever that were picked that are detached from the ground, and you find them in the mountains, the Cheskos Kol HaShvatim Hein Omdim, they're in the Chazaka of all the Shvatim. Anybody who finds them can take them, because Rashi explains that the same way as, for example, when the Jewish people conquered Eretz Yisrael, they found spoils from the Canaanim all over Eretz Yisrael, and they were common property. Anybody can take from those spoils. The same way over here, you find detached plants on the mountains in Eretz Yisrael, then those are free for the taking. They're hefker. And he continues, you shouldn't think they belong to the Shevet whose territory they're in. The Shetabuk of Betis wins, of course. You know, we're not talking about where the owner of the field picked them. We mean that where they were detached by the wind or whatever. And he continues, when they're attached to the ground, then they belong to the Shevet whose territory they're in. The point of the mountains is people don't necessarily have their farms on the mountains. That those areas were not necessarily divided up for the individual people to live. Those are more like the common property of the Shevet. What we're saying, so anything attached to the ground there is the common property of that Shevet. Anything detached is free for other Shvatim to take. And he continues, but as far as you're saying the mountains, so what do you think? Do you think that maybe only some Shvatim have mountains? No, Rav Shimon Elazar continues. There's not a single Shevet among the Jewish people who didn't end up having territory in the mountains and the and the lowlands and the Negev, the drier areas and the Emek, the valleys. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Hashem, Moshe tells the Jewish people at the beginning of Parashas Dvarim, Pnu Sulachem, he tells them that when we're ready to go in, he's telling them how years ago we were supposed to be ready to go into Eretz Yisrael until the story of the Meraglim, and Hashem said, Pnu Sulachem, turn for yourselves and travel. Uvoyu Har HaEmori V'Kol Shechenav, come to the mountain of the Emori and to all of its neighbors, Bar Rava, in the Arava, which in particular is the valley near the Yarden, Bahor in the mountains, Bashtela in the lowlands, which are like the area nowadays, like the area around Krachabad, Tel Aviv, that whole part of Eretz Yisrael is called Bashtela, over Negev, and Negev, the dry part of Eretz Yisrael, over Choyf HaYom B'Gomer, and the sea coast, where Marsha explains, that may correspond to Emek, the valley. So the point is, Hashem is describing to them that Eretz Yisrael has all those different topographies, all those different types of lands, and not only the Emori, the Chenat Amotiv, a Knanim of a Prism, of a Emorim Shalifneim, you find the same thing with the Knanim and the Prism and the Emorim who lived in Eretz, and then the Emorim who lived in Eretz Yisrael before the Jewish people. Mausha and Agros Habach take out those words, but anyway, those two words of Emorim Shalifneim. But anyway, the point is, the whole Eretz Yisrael has all these little microclimates and these little areas, so every Shevet was able to get those various parts, because each one is good for different things. The Gemara mentions in other places, mountains are good for some kinds of crops, valleys are good for other kinds, lowlands are good for others, etc. So like this, every Shevet was able to benefit from that. Shenema, Ba'al Kol Shechena, that says to all its neighbors, Alma Shechena, Okihabu. So we see that all the neighboring peoples of Eretz Yisrael, not just the Emodium, had like that. They were spread across the different topographies and the different geographies of Eretz Yisrael. So nowadays we have also. I mean, Eretz Yisrael has a different part. So nowadays, it's hard. I mean, we don't know exactly where the borders of the Shvatim were. We have it in a general way, but we don't know exactly. But La'asid Lava in Tosfos refers to a Gemara in Baba Basra that talks about how Eretz Yisrael will be redivided when Mashiach comes. It's going to be redivided into strips, a strip of land for each Shevet. And then you have also, there the Gemara, Tosfos says, there the Gersa is actually that Ein L'chokol Echad V'Echad Yisrael, every individual Jew is going to have within that strip of land that belongs to his Shevet, is going to have mountains and valleys and so forth. So yeah. Next, we said the next takana of Yeshua was v'nifkin l'achorei hageder. You can go to the bathroom behind a fence, even in a city that's full of kaukum, which is a very expensive spice. So what's the chiddush? So Amar Rav Acha bar Yaakov, l'nitzrucha elo l'tzel hemenut tzurur. So Rav Acha bar Yaakov says, the chiddush is that you're allowed to take a stone out of the fence to use to wipe yourself. And Rav Chista says that would be allowed even on Shabbos, even though rocks are usually mukta, but here you're allowed to because of covered abrius. The Me'iri stresses that we have to be talking about the rocks are not cemented in place in the fence. If they were, then that would be an actual malacha of soysu. You can't do that on Shabbos for Kore Dabrius. So we're talking about a fence of rocks that are piled together without any mortar holding them together. So then the chiddush is, even though it's a sodom malaya kaukum, and it's a very expensive spice, and we know the owner wants a strong fence around it, nevertheless, you're allowed to take out one stone from one or a couple of stones from there to wipe. And you got in there, so yeah, there's an entrance in there, obviously. When we say after the Shabbos, though, actually, the Magen Avraham Britons and the Altadabra Britons, it may not actually mean to take a stone from the fence. Maybe it means that you're allowed to take a clod of dirt from the ground, which would be less of an Isser of Soysa. So the Gemara tells, Mazutra Chassidah Shokol Mahader, Mazutra Chassidah, when he needed to do this, he would go to the bathroom in somebody's field, he would take a stone from the fence, but afterwards he would put it back, so as not to damage the other guy's fence. But he would tell his servant tomorrow, assuming that this took place on Shabbos, come back and cement it in place. In other words, he wants to make sure that he wants to go the extra mile to make sure that the owner of the fence is not going to get damaged by this. The fact that the stone is dirty now, of course, that's neither here nor there. It's part of the fence. The owner is not going to care if there's human waste on it. But whatever, the point is this way it's cemented back in place, and this way he's not going to eventually lose his fence.
So
that's what I'm saying. So even if it wasn't cemented in the first place, Mazutra Hasidah was saying go cement it back in place so it doesn't fall out in the future. Yet. We said a mahalchin b'shvila or shur sajateru reviyashniya. We said you're allowed to walk in the paths in other people's properties until the second rain falls. Again, this we said was during the time after last year's harvest has been gathered into the house and after you plowed, but before the second rain has fallen. So then at that point, the plants haven't started sprouting yet. So then you can walk through somebody else's property as a shortcut, and the other guy can't prevent you. And so we're talking about the fall, we're talking about Cheshvan time. We're talking about late Tishrei, early Cheshvan. So the Gemara says, Amar Papa, Bahai Didan, however, our lands in Babel, or Papa lived in Babel, that's different. Afilu Tal Toshila, even if only dew falls on the ground, which is much less rain, which is much less wetness than rain, still, then afterwards, when people step on that ground, it ruins the ground. So therefore, this dispensation of using a shortcut that after the gathering of the season would not apply in Babel, because our land is different. Babel was a more swampy area, and they're even when the dew falls and it's bad, a different explanation that the Shittim Kubetis brings is that actually the Rashba brings, it brings from Rabbeinu Hanano, that it means that some say even sheep walking through there, and sheep are little lambs, are lighter than people, even Babel, even that damages the ground. So therefore, so, you know, either way, the point is Rav Papa is saying you don't have this dispensation in Babel. The next one, we said you're allowed to go to the sides of the road and walk on the edge of somebody's property, even though crops are growing over there, in order to avoid the yisedis on the roads, like we said, the potholes and the not so much the edges, but like the spikes of dried mud that are sticking up in the road. So the Gemara tells, Shmuel for Rabbi Yehuda, have a shakli ba'azli ba'urcha. One time, Shmuel and Rabbi Yehuda were walking along on the road. Have mistalik Shmuel at Sidi Adrachim, and Shmuel was going to the side of the road. Now, this was in Chutzlar, it's because Rabbi Yehuda and Shmuel lived in Babel. Omele Rabbi Yehuda, so Rabbi Yehuda asked him, Tznoin shehisni Yeshua afilu b'Babel? Do these Tznoin of Yeshua apply even in Babel? Omele, and Shmuel says, yes, Shani, I'm afilu b'Chutzlar. As a matter of fact, yes, I say they apply even in Chutzlar, wherever Jews live. And the Gemara continues. Rebbe and Rebbe Chia have a shakli ba'azli borucha. Rebbe and Rebbe Chia one time were walking on the road. Istalkul l'tzidi hadrachim, and they also moved to the sides of the road. Have a kamafsiya ba'ozo, Rabbi Yehuda ben Knusa kamayu. Then Rabbi Yehuda ben Knusa was walking in front of them, and he was being careful instead of using this dispensation and walking on the sides of the road and walking on the edges of people's property. He was actually taking and making sure to step over and step around the potholes and the spikes and the things like that. So like he's acting with a way of midas chasidus. So Rebbe says to Rav Chia, this was in Eretz Yisrael, but so Rebbe asks Rav Chia, who is this who's showing off in front of us? Given that certainly these sakonas apply in Eretz Yisrael. So who is this guy walking in front of us who's acting in a way like that, in a gaivadika way, and saying like, I don't care to follow these sakonas, I'm going to be more machmir on myself. So Rav Chia says, he might be Rav Yehuda ben Knusa, who's my Talmud, I can tell you, Rebbe, that everything he does is L'shem Shemayim. He's not doing it to look gaivadik for Yuhara or whatever. He's doing it because he's truly doing L'shem Shemayim and doesn't want to damage somebody else's crops. So sure enough, Kimotu Lagabe, when they reached him, when they caught up to him, Chazye, then Rav Chia saw, and then Rebbe looked at him and realized, yes, he is Rav Yehuda ben Knusa. Amalei, so Rebbe tells him, Ilav Yehudim and Knusa Ah, you know what, if you weren't Yehudim and Knusa, the famous Chosid, then I would have assumed that you're doing it as a matter of Gaiva, Gizartinu L'Shokach V'Gizra D'Parzala, I would have cut off your legs using a cutting off thing of iron, which means Rashi says I would have put you in Nidri. I would have put you in Nidri, because how does a person act in such a gaivadika way? But like this, I see that you're Yehuda ben Knusa, and you're doing L'Shem Shemayim, so therefore you have every right to do what you're doing. That's sharp, but still, a person has to be careful. It's a matter of a person has to act in midas siddus, but a person also has to be careful that he's not doing it in a way of you are, like I'm showing off how great a person I am. So they were walking behind him. He should have realized other people are walking down the road. So therefore, Rebbe is telling him, fine, you, I know, you have a right to act with midas chasidus like that. With you, I know it's not you, Ara, as Rebbe just told me. But other people, not necessarily like that. So yeah, so Rashi says it means I would have put you in chayim. I would have put you in nidri. The Aruch says I would have made life so difficult for you that you would have wished that your legs were broken. And Marasha says that actually Gizra, he refers to a Gemara in Shabbos, that explains that a gizra is a strap. It's a kind of strap that you attach to an animal's legs to make it possible for it to walk with wider steps. You have an animal that normally would walk with narrow steps. You arrange a certain arrangement of straps on its legs to allow it to walk more wider steps. So Marshall says, he's telling him, you know, like this, you're obviously trying to take wider steps and avoid all these potholes and things like that. If I hadn't known that you're Yehuda ben Knusa and I thought you're doing it just to show off, I would attach those kinds of straps to your legs. So yeah, you'll have no choice but to take wide steps like that. Whatever the point is, in other words, he's telling him that for a regular person shouldn't be behaving in that way, but yeah, fine, you have, for you it's an exception. Okay. The next one, Hatoya ben Akramim, we said when a person is lost among the grapevines in a vineyard, mefasig v'orla, he can break and he can cut off branches to go downward or cut off branches to go upward in order to find his way. So the Gemara says, Tan Rabban, Haroya Chaveira Toya Ben Akramim. If a person sees another yid is lost among the vineyards, also Mephasig Va'ulam Mephasig V'yodid, then he can cut down branches to go up or down as necessary. Ad Shema Aleu, L'ir Ola Derech, until they can get the guy back on track to the city or to the road. V'chein Husha Toya Ben Akramim, in the same way if a person himself is lost among the vineyards, Mephasig Va'ulam Mephasig V'yodid, Ad Shema Aleu, L'ir Ola Derech. So the Gemara says, My V'chein. Why do we have to add that word V'chein? What's the difference? If you can do it for somebody else, why can't you do it for yourself? And the answer is ma'od tema. Otherwise, you might have thought chaveru who diyoda lahech masalit. Because when you're doing it to help somebody else, you know where he's going to get. You know where you're trying to get him to. You know the way. The other guy is lost. So you're not going to just go and indiscriminately cut down branches. You know exactly how to get to him and exactly how to get him back on track. So maybe that should be allowed. But the person himself who's lost, he doesn't know which way he's going. Maybe we shouldn't allow him to cut branches. The most we should allow him to do nehadre bei metzri. He should have to go around and look for the edge and go and find his own way without having to break through the branches. Or some mafoshim explain. It means at most, maybe we should allow him to cut the branches on the end. We should allow him to cut the branches on the ends towards the edges of the vineyard, but not in the middle of it. Anyway, so maybe only that. Kamash Malan, so therefore Kamash Malan, therefore the Braise is telling us that no, the person himself is allowed to. Now though, the Gemara asks, why does Yeshua need to make the Sakana Hadar Raisa? Isn't this concept of being able to do that, isn't that to save a person from being lost, is Daraisa? D'tanya, hashavas gufa minayin. A braisa says not only you have a mitzvah of hashavas aveda. How do we know you also have a mitzvah to restore somebody's body if a person, for example, is lost or in danger or whatever? So Talmud Lomar, v'ashevoy soy. The pasuk says you should return him or it. That includes you return. V'ashevoy soy loy means that you return him to himself. Whatever. The point is, we different ways of learning exactly. But Rashi himself here versus in Sanhedrin gives different ways of the limud. But the point is, we see that yes, there's a mitzvah to return the actual person. So of course you break through branches. And the answer is that's exactly it. D'araisa d'koy be'netzri. Midaraisa, all it would be is that you can show the other guy, here, go this way and go that way in order to get to the edge and then find your way out. But not to go cut branches. also who, but Yeshua came, tacked, the mafsig v'olam, the mafasig v'olam, mafasig v'yodet, Yeshua made the takana that you can even cut through branches in order to get back on track. And again, you have the machlokas of the Raivan and the Rashba, whether afterwards you would have to pay for the damage or not. Okay. The last takana was, we said, mes mitzvah konim akoymer, that a mes mitzvah acquires the place where he's found, meaning that you bury him right there. So the Gemara says, "Over many, I have a contradiction though. A Braisa says, "Hamotzim mes mutal beisratia." If a person finds a dead body lying in the street, isratia means like a major road. Isratia means a major road. In Latin, you have a word strata, which means a paved road. Eventually, the English word street comes from that. So in Gemara, it comes out as isratia. So you find a mess on a reshus harabim on a major road, mefanehu liyamin isratia over smol isratia. Then you don't bury the body right there under the road. You move him to the right or to the left of the road. And also stay bored of stay near. If you have on one side is an empty field which has not been cultivated at all, and the other side you have a plowed field, mefanehu this stay bored, and you move the mess into the uncultivated field and you bury over the hem over there, because then you're causing less hefsid to the owner of the field. Stay near or stay zera. If on one side of the road you have a plowed field which hasn't yet been planted, and another one you have one which has been planted, mefanehu this stay near, then you put the body and you bury it in the plowed field. What if both of them are empty fields, or both of them are only plowed, or both of them are planted? Then you move the body to whichever way you want. The point is, in other words, so we see it's not mes mitzvah koinim akoimo, because then if it was mes mitzvah koinim akoimo, then the owner of the field would say, what are you bringing them to my field for? If anything, you bury him under the road over there. Don't make me lose place in my field. Amra Bibi, b'mutal ala meitzer. What we're talking about over here in this braisa that we just quoted is where the mess is all across the border, all across the entire width of the road. If we don't move it, the problem is, if you bury him under the road, koyanim are going to pass by that road and they're going to become tamei. So therefore, since you're allowed to move it, then already you can move it to whichever side you want, depending what the situation of the fields is on the other side. When we say mess mitzvah, konim akoyimo, we mean when it's not under a road like that. Okay. So now they ask, Asara, what do you mean there are 10? Hani chadsu they have them. So far we have 11, because in the braisa at the beginning, on Pei Aleph Amud Aleph, we listed 11 things altogether. The answer is Mahalchim b'shvilei Rishus Shloim Amra. The answer is the one about walking on the Shvilei Rishus during certain times of the year, that's not actually from Yeshua, that's actually from Shloim Amra, a few hundred years later. Kedatani, as we learn in a brisa, Haresha kolu peirosa min asada. When a person's produce is gone from the field, he already harvested, he already gathered it in and everything. And yet he still doesn't allow people to go into his field to use it as a shortcut, even though he's not losing anything from it. Maha brias omrimolov. What do people say about such a person? They say maha no yeshlo plani. What is this guy gaining by keeping people out of his field? How would anybody be hurting him if they went into his field at a time like that, when it's not going to damage his crops or anything, because there's no crops there yet to damage? So people are going to say that he's a mean guy. All of our kosevoyma, the pasuk says about such a person, and this is mi yois toiv al tikri ra. When you're able to be good, don't call bad. In other words, you have an opportunity to do good to people, do good to them, don't do bad to them. The Gemara says, "Mi ksiv mi yois toiv al tikri ra." There's no such pasuk. The Gemara says, "Ain ksiv ki hai gad." There is a pasuk that expresses a similar idea, which we find in Sefer Mishlei. The pasuk says, "Al timna toiv ba'olav." Don't withhold good from its owner, from somebody that you could do good for. Bi yois la'el yod chalasis. When you have the power to do good. So therefore, so paraphrasing that is mi yois toiv al tikri ra. And since Shlomo HaMelech said this pasuk in Mishlei, so therefore the Gemara explains that Shlomo is not just teaching us an Eitz HaTovah, this is actually an official takona that Shlomo made. that apparently he saw there were people who were acting like that, and realizing that people are going to talk about such a person, so he made an official takana that from now on, you have to allow people to walk in your Shvili Roshus without protesting, and that way there won't be any of this problem of Miyos Tov Al Tikri Rav. This way people will be generous to one another and allow them to do it when it's kind of like Zenen of Zele Choser, basically, and this way they will allow people to walk through their fields at times like that. So when we listed before the Brice of the Takanas, we actually had 10 from Yeshua, and then there was one in the middle over there that actually is from Shlomo. So then we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, and we'll deal with, there are other Takanas that are attributed to Yeshua as well, and we'll deal with those, Bez Hashem. Shabbat Shalom, everyone.